I'm going to be trying to take some notes since Natalie cannot be here tonight. Okay. Welcome to the Arizona State Hospital Independent Oversight Committee. It's June 16th, 2022. It is 6:06, and we have quorum. So currently I see Chuck, myself, Melissa, D, and K on, which gives us quorum, and I do know that Barb was going to be absent. Oh gosh, so Alice said I sent her May's meeting. I can't find anything about it in her email, so she doesn't have the meeting one. Oh gosh, if I have to type this in, it's going to take a while. She wants
Lori,
to join.
Lori, the Google Meets link is the same, so it shouldn't matter.
Google Meet link is
mm-hmm. the same. If it's on the agenda.
Mm-hmm. Same. Okay. From any agenda.
Yeah, that's how I got in. I just clicked on Google Meets link.
Okay. So hopefully she'll be able to join momentarily. Okay, so welcome. Does anyone have a disclosure of conflict of interest? Okay, none being heard. Let's move on. Were you able to review last month's meeting minutes? And are there any motion to approve or motion to modify?
I move to approve. This is Melissa.
Okay.
I'll second that. This is Dee.
Okay, D seconds. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
So moved. Okay, Larry, is there any update from ADOA?
I do have a couple of updates for the committee. One being that the state is transitioning the website to a new platform. Mm-hmm. So I believe that's is going on right now as we speak. They're going to be transitioning all state websites here in the next few months. So you'll be seeing some subtle differences in the look of the website, but all the material and the look is pretty much identical to the old website. It's just going to be a little bit of difference, but it's pretty intuitive to follow. So once that gets up and running, I'll send the group out the new link. It's going to be the same address, but I'll send out the address and to the group, and you can hop on, take a look at it. Let me know if you have any questions. Just the other update is that the state fiscal year is up at the end of the month. So 7/1 starts the new fiscal year for the state. And so year end reports, your annual report rather, will be due November 1st. So you have plenty of time to work through that, work on some rough drafts and whatnot. But that is my update from ADOA. Any questions that I could answer from the committee?
Will there be a link on the old IOC site to the new site?
Well, no. Once that new site is established, that old site goes away. But all the old material, all the old minutes, all the reports, everything on there will still be on the new site. So it'll have a little bit of a different look, but for the most part, it's pretty intuitive. It's pretty easy to follow. And please reach out to me, drop me a text or an email, or call me, either way, whichever is easier. And I'd be happy to walk you through it. Or answer a question you might have, or you might have discovered an error that nobody else has. So please be patient with us while we work through that. But
okay, thank you, Larry.
But it should be good. Should be good to go.
Okay, Alice says she's in the waiting room.
I don't see. There's nobody pending to come in.
Okay, if someone wants to go in our chat and type the link while we're moving on, maybe that will help.
Yeah, sure.
Her.
I'll do that right now.
Yeah. I mean, we have a group chat, so I can send them information. Like I said, is everyone coming? If someone else can text the link,
gotcha.
That'd be great. Okay, updates from other IOCs. I did attend the Central Arizona, the Maricopa County IOC last night. They are opening up an investigation into some issues with UPC, the Psychiatric Screening Agency, and they were asking for clarification on the process on what happens, who investigates, what's the timeline. And, you know, I think with ours, like, we substantiated a claim of retaliation. The hospital, we've asked them to open one. I found out today they're still investigating that. They do want to have a meeting with Alice and I, but they hadn't reached out yet, but they should be. And then from there, they'll come up with their conclusion. I guess we'll meet and talk about what we still conclude that there was, and then we'll move on from there. I don't know what the process is, Larry, after that. Do you?
Well, once they determine a retaliation and get an answer back, then we would, the next step would be to have a have them put it in writing back to the committee, and a formal letter back to the committee. You would review that. The committee would review it, discuss it, and vote if you wanted to move forward with the inquiry, which would require a phone call with the interim director of DHS. Okay. Or the hospital. I'm not too sure how the flow, the hierarchy, I guess, is set up right now with Dr. Bowen leaving. So we'll have to work through that piece of it, but that's how it would flow.
Okay. With that, has anyone been able to send that to Alice? Because I don't have mine open. I just have an image of that because I already had it in. I have it on my computer, not my phone.
I'm having a hard time sending the link, but I'll see if I can send the PDF at least to her that has the link in it.
Yeah, okay. And worst case, she can just call in with a call in, but then she won't see the other information that we're going to share. So. But to keep things moving, I'm going to go ahead and move on while we try to do that. So the action items from the hospital, were you all able to see those, the response?
Yes.
Hey, did you get your response also?
I did.
Okay. Any questions on any of the responses?
I believe that the cleaning, the housekeeping thing, I believe that the housekeeping isn't doing as thorough of a job as they could be. I know our bathrooms are kind of disgusting and the showers haven't been really cleaned, and those aren't the common areas that they were mentioning in their response.
Okay. So would we like to make a motion that they provide information on the non-communal areas?
Yes.
Okay. So do you want to formalize that motion and then see if we have a second?
So how do I do that? Do I just say that I would like to inquire about the non-common areas such as the shower and the bathroom areas as not being clean enough?
Yes.
To the hospital. Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, still moved. We will ask the hospital for the information, cleaning for the showers, the other non-common areas, the kitchen, things like that. They also say in there it's not a human rights issue, having things cleaned. I'm also trying to type this in to Alice as we talk, because she's having a hard time getting in. Okay. Sorry, I can't do that and schedule the meeting. We did get
Alice information. Is here.
Hi, Alice. Thanks. So yeah, in the what Larry sends out, and then I forward to everyone, and I think he copies you, it's in that attached PDF. I think sometimes it's hard because you have to go into the PDF and you hit Google Meets. That's how you get in. But since I never join on my phone, I always join on a computer. I don't have it there to text. But if you can get it, we're going to be sharing some other information you may want to see. So I just can't text while I'm doing it.
I'm going to go on ahead and do that now, okay?
Okay. But you can do both. Stay on the phone while you do that. We were just talking about the response, and we had another motion on cleaning. We did get their policy on AWOL, and you know, essentially, they can't lay hands on someone that's attempting to leave yes. unless it's imminent danger.
Which is exactly what I thought, because that's the way it works over at CBI too. Okay, just a moment. I'll mute you and I'll try and get in. One moment.
Okay. And then also Ashley isn't on, but they've discontinued offering taking photos. They say patients are able to go on passes. They'll be able to get photos off site, and it's not a patient rights issue. Okay, so you're in now. Okay, Alice. Okay, let me go back to my sheet. The review of action items. The other thing that, you know, we asked about staffing and staffing information, and they did send pretty detailed staffing, and I'll share that with you in a minute. But first, let me give you an update from ASH administration. So I met with Chief Quality Officer Lisa Nguyen today. And she said that they're still investigating the retaliation claim that we had substantiated, and they still want to have a meeting. They'll reach out to us. We talked about some other, since I knew ahead of time, I brought up some of the issues that I had heard in visits. They know that we had asked about one person trying to get a compassionate visit with us due to a family situation. And they are aware of it. They're trying to coordinate a virtual visit with the family member's family who's in the hospital. Anyone on the forensic side without the PSRB meeting cannot, they were saying that cannot get authorization to go off-site for anything other than a medical appointment. It's a legal matter, and it's a compliance issue. So they're hoping to get a virtual visit. Jackie is willing to help. She's even willing to go to the place and use a phone so they can have that visit. So that was one thing. We talked about one unit is locked down with COVID. They say they understand it's really problematic to have the patients limited to the unit. They're trying to give as much patio time to offset not going off unit, but they're following all the protocol procedures. They say hopefully by this Friday it will lift on that one unit. They also have norovirus on another unit. They're working with epidemiology. The staff is wearing PPE, they're hand washing, they're deep cleaning the gym, the unit. They're educating all staff about norovirus, and they're hoping that unit will come off lockdown as well. Due to lockdowns and other issues, there have been higher number of incidents and assaults in May in the civil campus. they've just implemented some new trauma-informed care. They will implement new trauma-informed care with the new fiscal year. But they did say typically they usually have 75 to 80 assaults. They had 104. So it was much higher. Maybe it's a combination of being locked in the unit more, not being able to go out as much. One particular unit, in particular on the civil side, the assaults are high. It's their all-male unit. I asked again if they were going to think about discontinuing that and adding some females so you don't have all that male testosterone and everything. They said they did that for another good reason, because some males that are on that unit were targeting females and they were trying to keep the females safe. So I did ask if it's also been alleged that this one particular unit that's all males has had staff that have been only female, smaller, older, and they said not that they were aware of. They haven't seen that. And staff are required to be trained on all units. I also asked about, I saw that the forensic side, generally you don't get a forensic incident, or maybe one, but there were a lot. There were 11 on the forensic side in one unit. And it's a new patient readmission. So patient that was out, back in, they're trying to get special assistance for the patient that they feel that the patient needs that. They have done some things that seem to be slowing it down. So they had 11 incidents in May and only 5 in June. So that's less, so that's good. So that was the pass down from the hospital. Any questions or comments on that?
Did we ever do a chart where we looked at the number of like violent incidents that we have versus the staff that we have, like to see if that number is increasing because of the lack of staff?
Well, let me show you. I have one thing. We don't have that in particular, and the way they share the information doesn't make it easy.
I'm on only by phone, so I won't be able to see that graph. I was just curious. Okay, thank you.
I'll try to explain as we're going through, but let me share this real quick. Okay, so what we asked for, and I tried to put it so you could see more days at a month. Can you guys see this?
Yeah,
I can.
Okay, so what you're looking at here is this is each unit, and it's first shift, second shift, and NOCs. I think that must be nights, overnight or weekends or something. No, it's probably overnight because weekends are different. So this is for the first. You can see that the acuity was lowest on first. Then for the second, still not great. You know, it was 70% on the first shift that day. Mostly that looks like, if I look, I can make this big for a sec. We look, that was on forensic. So that was on Saguaro, Cottonwood, Sycamore, Mojave, Matt. But even here is one day that I can see that there was only 2 behavioral techs, 1 nurse. That was lower than it should have been. So you can see how they reported each shift. I can try to get you a copy of this later in the attachment.
Excuse me, I'm having a hard time seeing the numbers are so tiny. Yeah, if I can have a copy.
Yeah, I'll put it as an attachment. But you can see per shift, the acuity level, the how many full-time people there should be, how many nurses, how many behavioral techs, how many agency. And you can see the goal's 100%. They average the numbers, so you get an average of 86, but you did have a low period, especially on forensic units on that day. The next day, you can still see there's some red there. The third, it's a little bit better. It's inching up a little bit, but still low on the forensic units, and yellow for the others. They did have 100% staffing that night.
Excuse me, Lori.
Mm-hmm.
What are, okay, in the columns to the left of the circles,
mm-hmm.
yeah, where you see the red, yellow, and green there, what are those rows indicating? Is that like times, like breakdown of times of day or something different?
It's overall staffing to the acuity level. I can do real quick. I'll bring up one really big. So if you looked at this, mm-hmm. you could see here's a unit, here's acuity. So you have acuity over there. You have your actuals, you have your difference. So here's how many people should be on the unit based on the acuity. This particular unit's high medical and higher civil needs more people over there than the forensic. Here's the number of nurses they had, and the number of behavioral techs, and the number of agency. And that you see that for each unit, for all a day shift, all a second shift, and then night shift. Let me get this back down.
So. Okay, thanks. Because I was asking just to understand, even on the good days, except for the 100%.
Right, yeah, they should all be
a little bit of red. Yeah. So that's what I was trying to understand. Yeah.
I mean, ideally, if they were staffed up, and hopefully if they can get more funding, they'll be able to maintain staffing and give everyone pay raises, it will be better, and they could maintain it. So this was for the first 4 days.
This is Kay. I've heard from staff that they're not getting a pay raise for this next fiscal year.
I don't know. I have heard differently.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
The tech that I spoke with said that they weren't getting a pay raise, but I hope they are. That'd be great.
I can't guarantee it, but I think it's in the ask for the legislature. I think the budget's asking for it.
Yeah, they did ask for it, and it was refused is what I've heard, but I'm not sure. I only heard it through a tech.
Yeah, I can check. So here's the next one.
This is Alex. Excuse me. I just interesting because I think some of the BHTs, I talk about the fact they've been getting some pay raises, and then sometimes they'll say, hey, we'll give you double time if you go in. We have an urgent need. But the other thing is St. Luke's got with me recently, the HR department offering if I come back, that they'll give me a significant pay hike. So when we're competing, when the state hospital is competing with all this, you know, money and behavioral health, yeah. It's going to make it hard.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'd say that's a priority, getting the funding.
And I think they realize that because it's every hospital right now, and every agency is having a hard time keeping their staff, but they have to do something.
Yeah, especially when we've got, you know, the place that I work now and then the place where I used to work offering higher rates of pay. Not that I don't deserve it. I do the work of three nurses, literally. Mm. But let's face it, most of us do the work of three nurses. It's not just me. Well, no so matter if you get or not. So. Okay.
Here's the next wave. So here's the fifth. We're missing the seventh. I called and gave them some dates for missing. So here's the fifth. We're missing the sixth and the seventh. Here's the eighth. The eighth was a really bad day, kind of widespread. Low staffing. I don't know if that was a weekend or not. Let's see. May 8th was a Sunday. Was that Mother's Day? It may have been.
It was.
Mother's Day.
Yeah. Mother's Day, everyone wanted to be with their mom. Here again, the 9th, the 10th, and we move on to 11th, 12th, 13th is missing, 14th is missing. Here's 15th and 16th. You can see there's still many days that they have low staffing in several units. And then we'll go, I hope it makes it, gives it, puts it in perspective here, because I thought this was easier than trying to go through 25 charts. So this one is the 17th, 18th, 19th. We're missing the 20th and the 21st. And again, it's not getting up to 100%. Averaging, you're getting 75 to 80. Some days worse, like the 22nd was a bad day also. And on days and overnights. Overnight, here's the next crew. This is the 23rd, 24th, 25th, and 26th. So this has been May, and this is the 27th, 28th, 29th, and 30th. And then here's the 31st. When I talked to Lisa Nguyen, these were the dates we were missing. She pulled them straight out of where she gets it, their system. And when they asked, they didn't have those. They didn't have those dates. I'm trying to remember what she told me. But hopefully that kind of gives you a little view. And again, if I make this bigger, well, probably when I blew it up, I just took a smaller shot. So the numbers probably aren't really clear. But you can see some of the units, the forensics only have 2.75 people. One nurse.
That seems consistent with what I've been seeing on my unit. It's been one nurse, two techs, sometimes two nurses, two techs.
Yeah. And they say, you know, that's not what they want to have, but that's based on acuity and that's what's been happening. Okay, so I thought I'd show you guys that. Let's get back. Review, we reviewed the action items. Do you want to discuss anything like administrative separation still? Any continued follow-up, Melissa?
Not yet. I still have one more thing that I want to research, and then I'll be able to follow up.
Okay.
For our last meeting, thanks.
That sounds good. The staffing retaliation issues again. They're doing their investigation right now. PSRB, I did get an update today that, you know, the governor's office is trying to staff that. I've helped get some volunteers, a psychiatrist and psychologist, to submit to act on the PSRB, because it's going to take a while for them to write the rules and get it over to Superior Court. I got the message today that they are doing their final background checks and fingerprint checks on someone before they can appoint them, which makes me hopeful that we'll get an up and running PSRB shortly, which is good news, because, you know, people cannot progress without that. Okay. The other, I'm trying to move this. Do you want to go over visits or incidents and accidents first? Any preference?
No preference.
No preference.
Okay, so in here, I was trying to see if I could see, because we've heard from former employees calling legislators, and I've been called into meetings that their employees are saying that the staffing is so bad, it's dangerous for them and the patients. So we're looking too to see if we're seeing more. It's hard the way it's reported to see the number, but the hospital did say, again, that it was a little more violent in May, at least on the civil side, with more incidents and assaults. That's why they're working to introduce that trauma-informed care to try to get those down and get it under control. And hopefully with people being off the lockdown units too, that will help. So my first one is ASH 2022-1735. And it was in an all-male unit on civil, and a patient was being led into his room by a tech when the person assaulted the tech, punching her in the face. Code Gray was called, then willingly went to the seclusion. Patient was placed in seclusion, and everyone was notified. The employee called the employee hotline reporting injury and taking the rest of the day off to be seen by a medical provider. That was on the first. We had another one, same unit, civil side male, where a different assaulter, but this patient was being witnessed by a behavioral tech walking another patient in the hallway when asked to watch where his walking moved towards the behavioral tech, hit him several times in the head as the two fell on the floor. Code Gray was called, physical hold. Was noted that one of the behavioral tech that was involved was bleeding and his blood was on the floor and the nearby wall. Patient was would not agree to safe behavior. So, code was called. The behavioral tech suffered numerous injuries to his face, significant bleeding, swelling from a forehead laceration. They attempted to convince him to get medically evaluated, and security attempted to get photographs. The tech refused to be seen, left to go home. But I think they called to check on them, the nursing supervisor, and they finally, he made it home. He eventually went to the ER. He did send pictures of his injury to attach to the report. So it is noted that staff is getting assaulted. It is leading into requiring medical attention. And I think generally, this also came from Lisa Nguyen. Most months, there are 1 to 3 incidents or accidents that require some first aid. But again, in 10, there were many that required medical attention. The incidents are bearing that out. I also had, as I indicated, many forensic incidents, which is unusual, but it's a new readmission and they're working on that behavior. Next one is ASH 2022-1880. Same campus, same male unit. They were assigned with a one-on-one staff, approached a peer and put the person in a chokehold. They were struggling to get out. They turned around and grabbed the peer, threw punches. Unclear if they landed. All three patients deny injury. One of the staff said she was struck by a patient during the transportation of the patient, but is unable to state where. Staff member was offered the injury hotline, but decided not to use it. Watching the footage of the incident, staff noted staff was not focused on her task when the incident happened. Staff involved received coaching and reminders. Patient then complained of pain in his right thumb, was referred and evaluated to go for an x-ray on the thumb from the doctor. Let me see another. This one is ASH 2022-2021, civil campus, different one. Patient was refusing to go to unit and said, that he would patient would go on a 3-day strike on the mall until they ordered him meth. Well, that's not going to happen. So they attempted to encourage the person to go back, but there were safety concerns because he was out there for he was outside, and they were worried that it was too hot. That was at 11:30. They offered him Gatorade. And then finally, this has been hours. They were coaxing him to go in to or to drink Gatorade. They brought a wheelchair out, and they were trying to get him in the wheelchair. They didn't want to drag the patient, and the patient was refusing to walk. At some point, they were waiting for a wheelchair. They failed to get the patient in the wheelchair, so that they asked the doctor, can we just carry him back? So some of the big techs went to carry the person back. But they did say that they would have used a restraint chair, but unfortunately there people were not trained on the restraint. The training is not complete. It's a prime example of why they need the restraint chair. So it was easier. I don't know what the restraint chair looks like, but they can get a patient in that restraint chair and then move the chair. I guess strap them in, move the chair. But here was a perfect situation where that would have come in handy, but they're still training on that chair. If there's another, here's another one, Ash 2022-2053, and it's in same unit, the male unit. This patient was in the day room upset, got up and took a table, put it on the top of their head and was slamming it down on their head. They're trying to get them to not do that and put the table down, slammed it and said a couple number of times until another peer grabbed the table from the patient and put the table back on the floor, which I thought was unusual that it was another patient that got in to get the table away. When the review happened, and they do review all these things, as you could tell earlier when they had noted that staff needed to be paying attention. This one, it's noted they recommend replacing unit tables with safety tables to prevent the use of furniture and outbursts for self-harm or harm to self or others. Here's another one, 2022-2177. Patient upset for getting meds after refusing meds, and they was going after staff, punched the staff in the head. Multiple staff were prepared to do physical hold. They began kicking and punching multiple staff and security officer, and they called a code gray. Patient was taken to seclusion. Code was contained. Two members went to the ER with moderate injuries. Two more members went and received first aid. This is that same unit. Here is our final one, Ash 2022-2188. It was on another unit on the civil side. This time, a patient who is in a wheelchair, and they're with the one-on-one staff. The one-on-one staff said the patient took their seatbelt off, jumped off the wheelchair head first, and hit the head floor with a head bleeding. Patient not responding. Questions observed. Her eyes still open and blinking. 911 was called. They did appropriate head neck stabilization for possible head or neck injury. And they moved her carefully to put a towel between the wound and the floor to put pressure to stop the bleeding. They took vitals, and they were taken by paramedics to the hospital to Valleywise for that incident. She did receive PRM medications upon her return. And no new orders other than that. Any questions on the incident and accident reports. I mean, it does bear out. Go ahead.
No.
Okay, does anyone want to go over the visits that we've done this month?
I can do that. Go ahead.
We did just two, right? I was involved in the one where we talked to the patient on Pinion, and then you guys did a second one. Is that correct? Did you do that yesterday?
I did two a couple days ago, and then I called and didn't get through today. So I will call tomorrow, but I did two on June 16th with someone. Can't remember who. I didn't write that down, but there were two of us.
Okay. And Melissa, was that you? That was just talking a minute ago?
It was, but go ahead if you wanted to, the one that
well,
we did.
I was only, okay, with, so patient opinion unit, I believe that, you know, this was partially discussed earlier about the issues of him needing to visit with his mom and also make other arrangements. So he states that he was able to get a hold of his estate attorney, and also, you know, he's been given the information for the Yavapai County Attorney's Office to request a new PSRB attorney, since he doesn't have one currently, to try to help him with some of what's going on. I know there's no PSRB, but you know, he needs to have one moving forward anyway. He had a number of complaints, right, Melissa? Mostly some of the medical stuff that was going on.
Right.
Yeah. I don't have my notes in front of me. I could probably go ahead and see what you can remember.
Yeah, sure. No, I have my notes in front of me. It's okay. And well, I just okay. wanted to also pick up on the visitation for the family member, just to sort of share. Mm-hmm. You know, it was the patient's understanding that, or they were told that they needed to give 60 days notice, you know, and so that was an additional sort of stressor and struggling, right, with trying to get help. So it's great that Jackie, you know, it's great that there's going to be help and follow up to arrange that visit. But I guess, you know, it's been a very stressful time. And within that discussion, as you were saying, Dee, like there's some other medical concerns, right? There's one was, it was also the patient's understanding go ahead.
Right. Podiatry. That one was very worrisome to me as one of the ones.
Yes. So, right. Podiatry wasn't, you know, some of the, I guess, the regular, I don't know, what would you call that, Alice?
Just foot care.
And because of other medical conditions, it was important, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really important, and the patient was doing it themselves, and, you know, that's not an ideal situation. And I think they're not supposed to be doing that.
Yeah, I bet they don't have access to nail clippers. I'm not sure, but you mm-hmm. know, if he's been doing it himself, he's probably using whatever was available. So I know that was an issue for him, definitely.
Would you like to make a motion to see what the status is on podiatrists right now?
Yeah, I'll
make a motion.
Yeah, I'll second that motion. That'd be great. This is Alice.
That's okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
Aye.
Good. So moved. We will go ahead and ask about podiatry. Okay, go on. Sorry about that.
No, that's great. Thanks. Just a couple more things. So then it was also the perception and understanding that the only way that they could get a job was to use this very specific sort of glucose testing process. And I know that was, you know, described definitely as a source of stress. And then there was another part, with everything going on with the family member, they weren't sure if they were responding to like certain questions and follow up with an attorney that they needed to do, and paperwork was at this family member's house, so they weren't sure how to follow up on that either. So there's sort of just all of these stressors going on at the, you know, all of these things going on at the same time, I should say.
Yeah, it also seems to me that Melissa and everybody else, that in the interim, while his mom is, you know, not doing well, he doesn't have anybody to help him with his, mm-hmm. you know, his staffings, or, you know, he is, so basically he doesn't have a guardian right now. So that kind of puts, I just thought of that just now, and I don't know what the answer is to that, but he doesn't have anybody to, you know, stick up for him, to represent him, to advocate for him. So I don't know what, if anything, we can do to help him or direct him, or I know that he's got the estate attorney who's supposed to be doing that, but I can't see that happening really fast. And currently, you know, there's, I think, an urgent need for something like that to happen. So I don't know what the answer to that is. So do you, Lori?
I think that if he doesn't have a guardian and this person was his guardian and he wants another guardian, either if he has someone, they can be a change of guardian. And if he doesn't,
he stated he did not have anybody. So I don't know where he goes from there.
They can do a public fiduciary, a public guardian. Lots of people.
Yeah, I think that takes time too. You got to wonder what happens when there's, you know, an emergent need like that and how that can be expedited. But I don't know the answer to that.
Well, do you want to make a motion to ask about what happens? How long does it take if a guardian is no longer available and there no one else is an option?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the hospital should know the answer to that. I would think that they would have some sort of resources, or they can, Jackie or somebody could assist him with, you know, figuring that out, because I think that's really important for him to have somebody to advocate for him currently, in this, especially in this stressful, multi, you know, level stressors that this young man is having. And, you know, there's also a lot of, you know, medical issues going on. So I don't think it's just as simple as a public fiduciary. I don't know how knowledgeable they are in medical stuff, but yeah, you know, it just seems to me like he really is kind of in a position that, gosh, somebody really needs to step in and help him.
Okay. Well, we can, if you want to make a motion, we can ask what's the protocol and what do they do in the interim? What's the process?
I would like to ask, what their answer is, but you know, it might even be kind of late by the next time they get back with us on that too. So, but yes, please. I'd like to make the motion if somebody would like to second that.
I'll second.
Yeah, Alice will second it. Melissa, the thing is we need to know this for the future either way.
Yeah, that's true. All in favor?
Aye.
So passed. Okay. Let me anything else on the other visits?
So that's all I was part of. So
myself too, just to see.
Okay. I had a visit with someone, I can't remember who it was, as far as the other staff, but this patient was saying that the instances of patient concerns over staffing levels, problem of staff being sent, he sent these issues to the interim CEO, Michael Sheldon. He said the units become very aggressive. They have violent problems. He sent the same thing to Jayco and Senator Bartow, a very dangerous situation. He also said that there was a lot of violence on May 19th, and there were only two staff there. So when I was going through incident and accidents, I was looking for that unit for violent incidents and accidents that happened on that unit, and I didn't see any. So I asked Lisa Nguyen, and we were on, and she saw some, and she goes, "That is so weird. I don't know why you didn't see this. It yeah, it was an assault, and yes, and so she said, let me look into it and get back to you. And she looked into it, and this is something that can happen on the forensic side. The people that were involved in the incident are not SMI, so they don't have to send us the reports if they're not determined SMI. So they're general mental health, but they're still in a psychiatric facility. So that's why.
Let me understand this correctly. So if the patient is not SMI, or neither of the patients that are getting into physical altercations aren't SMI, they don't have to report this in an incident report?
They don't have to report it to us. They still have the incident report, and it still goes it still goes through their processes, but it doesn't come to us. We have the right to oversee people with serious mental illness.
That's unfortunate. Okay.
So that was first patient, and again, that unit where it was happening, the people involved are in SMI. The next person we talked to said has an issue with their service dog, not being permitted, very frustrating, not getting therapy, pet therapy, as it was indicated to us that they were bringing in pet therapy. They said they finally put it on the plan, 5 minutes of interaction with a pet, saying that they don't get enough pet therapy and they want more. They don't feel that they're addressing issues with people that have co-occurring conditions, not just for that patient, but others. If the patients have any type of autism, DD, substance use, they said there's a general lack of treatment. They also wondered why, when the person's support dog, service dog, and legitimate service dog was brought in for a visit, you know, where you go to visit family, that they wouldn't allow a visit, and felt that was really being punitive and nasty. Again, they don't like the broken reporting and grievance and appeal system, saying that most grievances are dismissed. This person has filed over 100 and they're all dismissed. They talked about another patient that does have co-occurring with autism, and the patient's lost all hope. It's creating a serious safety issue. In his opinion, he alleges the patient is showing signs of clinical aggression. He's being abused by staff, emotional abuse from the SAGO staff. He's been attacked and he is attacking. He had sucker punched staff. How can they protect patients and staff when this is going on? If we look into incident reports and file police reports, if you do that, you get threatened. He was told if they continue, patients have been told they send them to prison. Because they were not fulfilling their plea agreement, their public, and they claim that the CMO was interfering with patient treatment, and said that they were speaking for more than just them. So those were the two that we visited, and we still owe another person that we tried to get with that other person. And also, I know you guys tried to call another person that's requested visits. So Kay, if you talk to the person, I think there's been like 3 or 4 attempts. And they've either been off the unit, busy. I'm not sure what happened when you guys called.
Yeah, that person's off the unit quite frequently.
Yeah, he was off the unit, yeah.
Yeah, they said he was in the mall. So.
Okay, I know that person still wants to speak with you, so keep trying to reach out to them. Probably, I'm guessing the hours between 2 and 3 are probably the best. Okay. In addition, in an executive session, I have a couple more patients that want you to call them, so I would like to speak to you guys during that time to discuss their issues with you.
Okay.
Well, okay, thank you.
That sounds great. So let me... So that was all of our virtual visits. Any new business? So as far as legislation, on a positive note, there are a lot of bills that will help people with serious mental illness. There's a whole slew of them, and there's several related to ASH as well. So the bills, there's an SMI annual reporting bill that has passed and was just sent to the governor for signing. There's a court-ordered treatment passed and the governor signed it. There is a confidentiality in Title 36 proceedings that passed. There's Senator Fan's bill on ASH governing board. It's still moving in the House. Senator Gowan's bill, they're not sure if it's going to move or not. So there's a lot of movement. When they're all done and signed and final, then we'll have a little write-up on each of them. But there's a lot of interest. And ASH and things that have been reported. You know, I don't think anyone in the administration likes it when there's getting so much news coverage. They're looking into it and there's appetite to make changes. Okay, so we're at that point for public comment, and after that we'll adjourn and go to executive session. So anyone on want to give public comment?
Hello, this is RD from Sayhill.
RC?
RD. You probably remember me from other incidences here at the hospital, but the main concern that I have is my diabetes. And a few weeks ago, I filled out a grievance and it's being escalated, but it's not being taken care of in a timely manner, I should say. Because I went up to the nurse's station and I was sweating profusely, had a headache, and I asked for a blood sugar check from the PNSS Christie. And she denied me it, and the lead tech that was on told me to drink 2 of my juices. I refused the juices and pleaded with Christy to take my blood sugar. At the time that she took it, my blood sugar was at 161 points, which at 151, I'm supposed to take insulin. So I asked her to contact the doctor and get me some insulin because I didn't have any in my tray because I just transferred from Pinion to Sayville. And then she was like, well, you're going to have to eat dinner here soon for your dinner meds. And I was like, well, while you're waiting and stuff, just get a hold of the doctor because my blood sugar is going to be higher. After dinner, my blood sugar was taken again and it was 185 or 3. And she still refused to contact the doctor for insulin. So knowing my own body, I started drinking water because if you're diabetic and your blood sugar is elevated, you tend to urinate more. So to help alleviate the urine and getting dehydrated, I drank more fluids. Nothing that included sugars, just water. When Christy left for the night, she still had not contacted the doctor, and the PNSS Steve told me to fill out a grievance, which I had previously did after she refused 3 times to contact the doctor, and he told me he was going to write a grievance, and which he did, and I'm just waiting on, you know, finding out if that's a medical concern because she continues to refuse to do blood sugar checks and calling the doctor whenever I need insulin. So, and if you can, please call me here at the hospital. Any time of the day is fine with me, even weekends, I'm available.
I'm safe.
Okay, now, can you please repeat your name? You know, we can't answer anything in public comment, but I could not understand the name.
My name is Robert Dunn.
Okay.
And I'm on Sago.
Okay, thank you, Robert. Do you want your name in the meeting minutes?
Yes, I do.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Do we have any other units or anyone else from the public that would like to speak?
Hello, this is Matthew Solon.
Hi, Matthew.
Hey.
Do you want your name in the minutes?
Sure. I just wanted to ask if you guys could come see me as soon as you get a chance. That's all.
Okay. Well, thank you, Matthew. Anyone else? Okay. With nothing.
This is kind of Kay speaking out in public comment. I was wondering if there's any way possible that the hospital would let us have access to our emails. I don't see, as long as we're not clicking on anything weird or, you know, they have the correct firewalls up, that like we can't have like basic email address. And antivirus software. I don't understand why we can't have email access here.
Okay. No, we can't respond, so. If you were talking out in public comment, you can't respond. If you're talking out as an IOC member, you can ask.
Okay, I'll speak as an IOC member. I was wondering why patients here aren't allowed email access. As long as they have antivirus, and firewalls up, I don't understand why we can't just read our emails.
They probably, I'm just saying from issues in the past, I wonder if they're able to block, you know, some patients are not allowed to contact other patients, or maybe the persons that they may have assaulted, or some family members. I know that there are a list of people that they cannot talk to. I wonder if they can block that on email to make sure that they're not reaching out and contacting them.
They wouldn't be able to do that. They wouldn't be able to do that. That's probably why. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Okay. I know that they have numbers that they block to prevent that in the phones. I don't know. You guys would probably know better as patients, but I know that's come up in the past. We can ask about it though, so we all understand what are the reasons and how they block patients from contacting certain external people.
Do we need a motion to that effect?
Yes.
I make the motion that we ask the ASH administration why people that are housed in Arizona State Hospital are not allowed to use emails.
Okay. Do we have a second?
I second.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, so moved.
Aye.
Is there anyone else from the public? Okay, well, I motion that we adjourn to executive session. Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, 7:10, we adjourn to executive session. Okay, Larry, do your magic.
Okay, let me stop the recording. And okay, I assume all the patients have left.
All patients above.
Okay.
I think we have, 3-1 just
there
left.
We go. Okay, Lori, you're all set.
Okay, we're in executive.
Oh, wait, hold on. Hold on one second. It didn't stop recording. I'm sorry.